I have now an enormous pleasure to present our next speaker. Her clients include the New Yorker, Penguin Books, Faven Press, Tate Modern, Tate Britain, BBC Worldwide, Ron Arad, New York Times, and the Royal Mail. Internationally acclaimed and exhibited, she was the first woman illustrator to become an honorary royal designer for industry. With you, Sara Panelli.
I'm Italian, but I have been studying and then living in London for the past 15 years. And as an illustrator, I work on commissions and also books that I write and illustrate for children. And then I do a body of work which is inspired by things that inspire me in everyday life. And I've had the chance to use them in a book recently. So I'm going to show you bits of work from all that. But before we start, I went around my studio and picked up some pictures that maybe show a bit of the way I think, since this is also about process. And there's a wonderful saying by Beckett. It says, ever tried, ever failed, try again, fail better. And for me, that summarizes a lot of life in general, and definitely as an illustrator. These are a few pictures from my studio. This is a little bit what I would like to happen, for the light things in life to pick up the weight. When I say light, it's more the way Calvino thinks of light things. It's not a derogative, it's a very positive thing. But then inevitably this happens, this panic and difficulties, and then I think maybe I can ask for help. And it's the kind of help I end up asking. It's always cumbersome and it doesn't help much. And then I love this one because sometimes you don't think, but you could ask for help from the wolf as well, because the enemy as well is being lost. So I like this picture very much, where both Little Red Riding Hood and the wolf are lost in the woods. And then I think, well, I'm Italian, I should be cheerful, everything is easy, and why is it like that? But my Italy never was like this, and past 20 years of politics have destroyed the hope of improvement for the moment in Italy. So this is another picture I keep, which is much more of an idealized version of my country, which still inspires me though. And going from the idealized again, then something happens and it's another not in daily life to struggle with. And finally, I often think, go back into the box and see what happens. And sometimes good things happen, like this one. This first work of mine is a commission. It was a wonderful, it's the biggest exposure I've ever had. It's in Tate Britain. The art museum opened in 2009. And in 2005, they had a first refurbishment. And I was asked by another AGI member, Marina Wheeler, who had done the identity for the museum, to draw these four gallery entrances and one long timeline on two floors of the museum. The idea was that the museum wanted a handwritten approach which suggested that the choices were not set in stone. So for those 5 years, you could see those artists, but it didn't mean that those were the only important artists. And hence, they didn't want to have a very set typography. They wanted to have this hand approach. On the white wall, there's a really long timeline. It's about 40 meters long, and it shows art of the 20th century. For me, I think it's quite surprising to see, or it was at the time, to see quite a freestyle within an institution like Tate. For me personally, I think with the timeline it works. Sometimes I think that with the gallery entrances, it ends up being a bit of a pattern altogether. I wanted to give more structure to the writing, but the whole point for the curators was that they didn't want to suggest any hierarchy. So this was actually the answer to the client's brief to to have an overall layout. Also, I had worked for Tate Britain for a trail for children. They asked me to choose some of the exhibits that they had for the 6 months that they kept them on, and to devise a trail for children to go and look and do activities. So this is the front cover and the back of a booklet. And it was really fun to redraw the map of Tate, which is, again, usually very computer, very crisp map, but to draw it a bit like a child would. This is just a spread inside to see the challenge in this was finding the balance between already offering something interesting for the child and also leaving enough space for them to feel. So in this case, I was suggesting in the Tudor and Stuart portraiture room, they should go around and pick up the flowers on the clothes of the portraits, these intricate, beautiful embroideries. And if the children drew on this green, these flowers, they were creating their own field and meadow. Yeah, this was from two paintings in the gallery. I was suggesting picking up certain elements and doing their own version. That was a wonderful painting, already suggesting a city, so I was asking the children to give the population to this city. One of the subjects that has been inspiring me a lot is literature, and I did a series of work on the Pirandello play, Six Characters in Search for an Author, and then it became an exhibition. This was the poster for the exhibition, with the six characters each having a different approach to communication, different kind of bubble speeches. This is from a children's book. It was based on the story of Pinocchio, the classic Italian. And the book comes in a slipcase. So as you take the book out of the slipcase, there's this little animation happening. So the nose of Pinocchio, as you take it out of the book, looks as if it's growing. And the same happens, of course, on the back. There's these four characters. And as you take the book out, it looks as if their nose is growing. And this was the only twist for me. In the whole of the book, I really kept faithful to the traditional story. But even the cricket on the back, the cricket's nose prolongs as well, which means that even the cricket, that is the one that's always supposed to tell the truth, even he tells lies sometimes. And then when you enter the book before the text, I position a series of photographs of the countryside in Tuscany. The book was written in Tuscany. And to me, although you can do contemporary books for children, the story can be contemporary, I think there's no reason to extrapolate the story from its original environment. So I really wanted to set, a bit like in a film as a title sequence, to when you enter the book, you enter the world, which is also the countryside in Tuscany. And you enter and the characters, you discover the characters in the landscape. This is a spread, double spread inside. It's when Pinocchio goes and sells his school book to in order to go to the puppet theater. And there's this square, in Italy there's this life as a theater approach, and the square becomes almost the whole world. So the horizon is curved. It's as if the whole world has shrunk to the square. That's the cat and the fox, which Pinocchio should have never trusted. That's Toy Town, where Pinocchio ends up because he doesn't go to school. And this is a scene where the two carabinieri take Pinocchio away. The book is in every other page is black and white, so it's color and black and white. This is a sample of the black and white spread. That's when Pinocchio's been turned into a donkey. Still him. I really enjoy doing book covers, and I also enjoy handwriting typography. Not always it's the right case for handwritten typography, but it's nice when it works to include it with the illustrations. So this is a collection of poetry for children. This is another of my own books. It's a story of one day's events, seen by seven different characters. So every character tells what they thought happened that day, and the things overlap, and by the end of the book, you know what's happened throughout the whole day. And some of the position of the characters about the events are very different from each other. So it shows also how it's up to you to decide which one to believe, whether you believe the chair version of the events or the girl version. This is to show some handwriting again within the book. And every character, I have to think of a different way of writing. This is the writing of the little girl. And then I had to think how a spider would write, which was quite fun. I took nib and ink, and I was trying to really scratch into the paper. That's the spread where all the insects are at the masquerade party. They've swapped around their orders of... So the butterfly is wearing caterpillar's legs, and the spider is wearing butterfly wings. That's the handwriting of the dog. I was thinking the dog can be quite scruffy and make mistakes, so I use a really, really thick pencil. Another children's book which was inspired by a love for Greek mythology, which runs through quite a few of the projects. And my idea was to introduce Greek myths to very, very young children, because in my experience, when we first encounter this mythology, we are overloaded with information and often put off by the amount of information. So I thought if every child could just remember the image of the monster and how many eyes or legs they had, that would be for me fantastic. So next time when they encounter it again, they would be prepared to learn more. So the cover of the book has the picture of Argus, and on the back I found this old picture of the Parthenon. And I used that with all my new characters on top. For instance, there are double spreads, very simple. There's no narrative, it's a sequence of images, sequence of monsters. This is the three-headed dog Cerberus that guards the underworld. And the Minotaur, which is a reoccurring myth with my personal work as well. The wonderful thing using collage is that I can take papers, also the excuse of going to flea markets and constantly collecting old papers. And when I was coming to do this picture, I was thinking, how can I depict the old Greek landscape? And then I found this beautifully foxed, beautifully mottled and spotty paper, which to me suggested so much the rocks of Greece. These are two kinds of half-women, half-bird creatures. The sirens, who we think of half-fish and half-women, but actually in medieval times that's what became, in antiquity was half-bird and half-women. And the harpies, for nasty birds with bad breath. And then I discovered this monster, which is actually mother to a lot of... I didn't know this when I did the research for the book. I met, and she gave birth to almost all the monsters inside. So this, I thought it was nice to finish with a family for a children's book, although it's a monstrous family. It's a poster for a cider called Mary Down, and the brief was to have an image that works one way and the other way. So one way is merry, happy, and the other way is down, depressed. I was really lucky to be commissioned a stamp by the British Royal Mail. This brief was on a stamp like this. I had to celebrate the emancipation of women through the bicycle, the beginning of the road signage, and the environmentally friendly aspect of this is a book by a contemporary writer, and it was to show how the same theme, like the Minotaur that was in the children's book, to me there's a continuity within the work, so although this is for a different audience, still the same approach. The cello CD, turning the cello into a dog and the neck of the cello into a bone. And then there's a song about a donkey and a driver inside, so the cello is also a donkey. A couple of years ago, Penguin turned 70 years old, and they commissioned different graphic designer and illustrator to do a cover. I was given The Snobs by Muriel Spark. And for me, that's another play with using collage, the fact that I actually used an old Penguin book piece of paper to make the collage for celebrating the 70 years. So that piece of paper that looks old is a collage of different old Penguin books. That was a lovely commission for the New York Times Children's Book Supplement. It comes out 4 times a year, and this was the spring issue. This was again for the New York Times, which was commissioned by another AGI member, Nicholas Beckman. There's a lot of AGI connection, which is I'm quite fond of mentioning. Today, Henrik mentioned he got a job because Stefan passed it on. I got this job because Jeff Fisher passed it on. He couldn't do it. It was covers for Pizza Express, which is a chain of pizzas in London. So it was 4 different pictures for menus. I was given the text and I could handwrite it. Obviously, they gave names of pizzas. This is a project that was really, really important to me because it contained work that I've been doing for several years, at least 10 years, and it's the work that is inspired by trying to figure out life and trying to make sense of it. And sometimes I come across a poem or a quotation or even in a book a sentence, and I noted it and then I did a piece of work, and finally I decided that I would try to divide up the body of work into sections, into categories, and make a book which be supported by the wonderful text that these pictures were inspired by. It was a long journey because illustrated books not for children are very rare, but in the end I had the privilege of being able to publish it and also of working with very special people. Henrik had suggested this cover using just typography, which was a departure for me, not having any illustration at all. And then inside I was working on the typography, and like an angel, Bruno Monguzzi appeared, and he happened to be at my place, and then he said he was going to help me with it as well. So it's an extra special book. On the back of the book, there's a list, handwritten list of all the authors that I quoted. It's the only place where they appear together. And Bruno had this wonderful idea, not only to have a nice looking picture, but also to have a code, so that according to the color of the name of the author, we know in what language they originally wrote. So we have Cicero, for instance, the Latin is capital red, and capital pencil is Spanish, and so on. The title, Sometimes I Think, Sometimes I Am, which is a Paul Valéry quote. And it's divided in 4 chapters, which carries 5 main topics for the quotations. We start with devils and angels, then love, then there's a central section on color, and then the mythology, which has already come a few times, as we've seen, and finally the absurd. This is a spread that sort of summarizes most of the content, because it has quotation from all those subjects together, and that comes before the first chapter. This is, angels can fly because they take themselves lightly. I discovered that a monk in the 15th century decided that playing cards were the invention of the devil. And so there's a connection between playing cards and the devil. And there were 2 really nice quotations, which is quite nice sometimes to have on the same spread, a quote that suggests one thing and then another quote that suggests the opposite. So it's up to you again to choose which and at what time which one you think is right. This one is, one should always play fairly when one has the winning cards, by Oscar Wilde. And life is not a matter of holding the good cards, but of playing a poor hand well. That's, in heaven an angel is nobody in particular. And also like this one is a German proverb, and it says, where the devil can't go, he sends his grandmother. This one, is a compilation of them, but one I particularly like is "Go to Climate, Go to Heaven for the Climate, Go to Hell for Company." This gives the title to my lecture, is it progress if a cannibal starts using a knife and fork? It's a very good one. This, in fact, was the same concept as in the Merry Downsider. The same picture works upside down, and it says, "Oh, what may man within him hide, though angel on the outward side." So it looks like an angel this side, but when you turn it round, it can be the devil as well. And this is one of my favorite quotes. It's James Joyce. It's about the devil, and it says, "The devil mostly speaks a language called Beelzebubble, which he makes up as he goes along. But when he's very angry, he can speak quite bad French very well. Though, some who have heard him say that he has a strong Dublin accent." Every chapter is introduced by a handwritten flagship quotation. So the one for love, which is the second chapter, is "To live is like to love, all reason is against it, and all healthy instinct for it." Some of the objects are three-dimensional and then have been photographed, and some have come out of sketchbooks I had, artist books, some are etchings. This, for instance, was inspired by Oscar Wilde, The Ballad of Reading Gaol, and it was an artist book that I had already made in printmaking, and it's reproduced here as a whole. It's the refrain from the ballad, and every page carries a piece of it. So this starts, "And all men kill the thing they love. By all let this be heard. Some do it with a bitter look, some with a flattering word. The coward does it with a kiss, the brave man with the sword." "To write a witty poem, try onion juice," which is from Mallarmé. I'm actually doing, my latest book is a children's book and it's the story of an onion. So this is where it started, the onion theme. And then one of the big inspirations for me was Alan Fletcher, The Art of Looking Sideways. A wonderful book to all the students here, I really strongly recommend it, full of ideas and inspiration. And in that book, I found a quote which Alan didn't attribute to anybody else, so I assumed it was his way of saying the concept, so I attributed it to him as an homage here, which is, "The person you love is 72.8% water," which is a fact, we all are, but I like the way he worded it. "Tell me where is fancy bread, or in the heart or in the head," that's from Shakespeare. This was another poem that is from Odin, and it goes to the title is "Note of on Intellectuals," and it says, "To the man in the street, who I'm sorry to say is a keen observer of life, the word intellectual suggests straight away a man who's untrue to his wife." And the other one is, "You would not want a date with a left brain hemisphere," which is the very rational side of the brain, very calculating, rational, domineering. The middle section of the book carries the quotations on color, and it's completely different from the rest of the book. Suddenly, it's full bleed. There's a smaller book, and it's full bleed, and the quotations are written inside. They're not separated as a typography comment. "Color in a Picture" is like "Enthusiasm in Life" by Van Gogh. "The purest and most thoughtful minds are those which love color the most." "Color is the place where our brain and the universe meet." Here you see how it works. So there's the middle of the book and then the smaller book with the quotation, and finally there's an even smaller book inside with no words at all, just color. And for me it's like a little code. There's this. The first page is this, so it's navy blue, and then pink rose, and ruby red, forest green, duck egg green, wine red, and yellow leaf. And at the very end of that section, the color is black, and it says, "Et in Arcadia ego." And then we carry on with the second part of the middle book. Any color, as long as it's red, is the color I love the most. Finish of the section. This is the mythology. You can't expect anything new from an ego, from an echo. And the wonderful quotation about myth is, these things never happen but are always, which is the timelessness of those subjects. Another beautiful one is, they are real discoverers who think there's no land when they can see nothing but the sea. Our ideals, like the gods of gold, are constantly demanding human sacrifices. This one I chose because sometimes the quotations contradict the text. Contradict the picture. So the picture is full of text, but actually the quotation says how myth is also expressed with silence. It is not down on any map. True places never are. And finally is the section on the absurd. Our greatest blessings come to us by way of madness. Socrates said that. This was a picture that I drew on the back of the actual piece of paper, and it represents a Calvino quote. And the quotation goes like this. It says, like a sheet of paper with a figure on either side, which can neither be separated nor look at each other. So the piece of paper has the drawing on the reverse, really pressed deeply with bio, but the two drawings will never be able to meet. Life is a Horizontal Fall by Jean Cocteau. This is the biggest robber that robs everything that's most precious to man, time. This is, for this picture, I actually took a drawing from the British Museum, from Inuit collection. So all of these, are, as I said, the book contains bits from sketchbooks and pieces that were made on purpose for the book. There's a sequence of quotations, again, from Beckett. And there's one I particularly like that I'd like to read to you. It's Estragon and Vladimir here, and they are talking about... Well, they're talking about many things, but at one point, one says, talks about the crucifixion, and he says, one savior, two thieves, one is supposed to have been saved and the other damned, and yet, how is it that of the four evangelists, only one speaks of the thief being saved? The four of them were there or thereabouts, and only one speaks of a thief being saved. One out of four. Of the other three, two don't mention any thieves at all, and the third says that both of them abused him. Why believe him rather than the others? People are bloody ignorant apes. Yeah. We're near the end. It's a poor sort of memory that only works backwards, and the hardest thing to see is what is in front of your eyes. And finally, the last picture. It's the last picture in the book, and it contains quotations all on the different takes on I think therefore I am. So I think therefore I am, this Descartes. I ought therefore I can, Kant. I want therefore I am, Tolstoy. I rebel therefore I am, Camus. Then there's the English understated I think that I think, therefore I think that I am. And finally, sometimes I think, sometimes I am, which is the Paul Valéry quote. Which comes at the end, but is the title of the book. Thank you.